This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, we're going to be talking about employment law issues of workers in the shared gig economy, such as Uber, Lyft, etc. My guests are very experienced employment law attorneys, Michael Malema of the Los Angeles law firm of Parker, Milliken, Clark, O'Hara, and is that Samuelian?
Samuelian.
Thank you, Michael. And Joshua Young of the Los Angeles law firm of Gilbert and Sackman. And Thomas Lenz, who's a partner of the Cerritos, California law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Lawyer, Rood, and Romo. My guests are members of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Tom is going to be the chair of the Labor and Employment Law Section in a year or two.
That's right.
And it's wonderful to have you. Tom's in the studio with me. Michael and Josh are by phone, and we're going to get to them in just a moment. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Now, we had close to the station recently, in the last week or so, a fire that burned out AT&T lines. We've had some difficulty with telephone lines. We're hoping that it'll work tonight. Let me try this experiment. Michael, can you hear me?
I've got you loud and
clear. Ooh, this is good. And Josh, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
And Josh is in Colorado. Michael's in Los Angeles. Josh is in Colorado. And Tom is here. All right. What I'd like to do, Michael, if you would start, you wanted to talk a little bit about the demographics of drivers for Uber, Lyft, et cetera. Let's start with that and then get into issues which I, as a longtime lawyer, are concerned about, whether or not these people are independent contractors or employees and et cetera. But, Michael, if you would start.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Yeah, as we dive into this topic, I think a few demographics help provide very useful context in analyzing exactly why there is such a hot dispute over the proper classification of the drivers for Uber, the drivers for Lyft, the taskers for TaskRabbit, and so on. According to statistics that were published in 2015, the Uber drivers are a short-term, disproportionately educated workforce, the majority of whom quit driving for Uber in less than a year. 48% of Uber drivers have college degrees, as compared to 25% of the general working populace. 62% have other jobs. The majority drive 15 hours per week or less, and only 19% drive over 35 hours per week. The number of drivers who have completed four or more trips for Uber as of the beginning of 2015 was 162,037.
Is that just Michael? Pardon me.
Drivers never previously worked as a driver.
Let me interrupt for just a moment, Michael. Is that 162,000 drivers? That's in the United States or all over the world?
You know, I believe at that time that was the total. Although Uber has, as I understand it, gained in speed and expanded into a lot of other countries since
then.
Wow,
it's incredible. But pardon me, go ahead.
And perhaps the most important statistic for purposes of our discussion today is that 9 out of 10 Uber drivers have reported that being their own boss and setting their own schedules was the primary reason that they became Uber drivers in the first place. And it is this question of how you classify a worker who can choose not only when to work and the duration of their shift, but whether to work at all, and whether that worker can fall within an employee classification or whether they are properly classified as an independent contractor, despite the fact that Uber and the similar companies in the sharing economy do exercise significant forms of control over these workers, including subjecting them to background checks, penalizing them if they reject rides, deactivating them if their metrics are wrong, and so forth. And and I should say, controlling the rates of the rides.
Let me clarify for everyone that Michael Malema primarily represents employers. Joshua Young represents employees. And for the most part, Tom Lenz represents employers. Is that right?
Correct.
Now, let me, if I may, if this is okay with you, Michael, let me turn to Josh and ask you, Josh, since you represent employees, what are your concerns about this situation? It sounds to me, and I am not an employment law attorney, but it sounds to me if 9 out of 10 of these drivers like being their own bosses, that to me means that they're very happy not to be employees. What's your comment on that, Josh?
Well, as a lawyer who represents employees, my concern is that the drivers who are being classified as independent contractors or other workers in this sharing economy are not receiving any of the benefits of employee status, right? So they're not guaranteed a minimum wage, they're not guaranteed meal and rest breaks, overtime pay. You know, the list goes on,
yeah.
and the companies are making tremendous amounts of money, essentially, on the backs of the workers. And so, you know, my concern is you've got drivers who are doing this a few hours a week, but you've also got people who are full time and who are working around the clock and who are not receiving any of the protections that would typically be given to employees.
Let me throw out this question to the three of you. Generally speaking, at least as far as California is concerned, what is the average hourly rate that these drivers are getting? Tom, you don't know. How about you, Josh? Do you know?
I believe it's something around $19 an hour.
Ah, okay.
Isn't that right, Michael?
You're right on the money. It's at least that's what's reported is $19.04 an hour, but that average hourly rate, to acknowledge Josh's point, is less the sorts of benefits that an employee would receive, and first and foremost among those is mileage reimbursement. And when you factor in the gas costs and related vehicle expenses of an Uber driver, for which a Californian employee would be entitled as a matter of law to reimbursement, that $19 presumably becomes a whole lot less.
So in other words, just to clarify, because most of us who are listening to what the three of you gentlemen are talking about are not familiar with all of this, are you saying then that $19 an hour for this driver, whoever it may be, that he or she has to pay for their own gasoline for their vehicle and own maintenance costs, and this is not something that Uber or Lyft or whatever it may be is adding to the $19 an hour. Am I correct on that? Tom?
This is Josh. That's correct. That's the major source of disputes. I mean, you hear about lawsuits against Uber and Lyft and some of the other companies. And that really is the bulk of the recovery that's being sought, because in California, as Michael pointed out, it is illegal to deduct those amounts. You know, if you're an employee of a company and you drive
company
car, you don't have to pay for your own gas, right?
But if you're an independent contractor, you do. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, if you're an independent contractor, you're basically holding yourself out as an independent business, and you would be responsible for equipment, maintenance, and the various expenses related to plying your trade.
What I want to let all of you know, we are doing this program live on September 21st, Wednesday evening. And those of you who listen to this program know that we are live for a full hour in the Bay Area. We're live on the internet at www.klw.org. And now we are also on the NPR satellite for the full hour for national distribution. Those of you who are listening to the program live in a while, in about 20 minutes or so, I will give you our toll-free number, and you can call in. If you are an Uber or Lyft driver or one of the other drivers and you have a question, a comment, or whatever, or if you are a passenger and you have a question, a comment, or whatever, I welcome you to join us, and I'll give you right now, I'll give you the toll-free number We will not take any calls until about California time, 7:30. But the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. We will be taking calls starting around 7:30. So coming back to you, Michael, what thoughts? Now, Josh mentioned something about litigation. What's going on here?
There are countless lawsuits that have now been filed against Uber. There was recently a $30 million settlement that was that received preliminary approval against Lyft, all on this exact issue, this challenge to independent contractor status for these types of workers. And it's a remarkable tension that we're seeing in the political sphere and in the courts right now, between all of the efforts going on to improve the condition of workers, the minimum wage increases that are being pushed across the state and in a lot of cities, and the coordination between regulatory agencies working to enter into MOUs. The Department of Labor has entered into agreements with the enforcement arms of 33 different states to crack down on independent contractor misclassification.
Wow.
And at the same time, every economic incentive from a legal standpoint says to companies and hirers, if we can possibly call our workers independent contractors, we should. They save on 7.5% on payroll tax contributions. They avoid paying for workers' compensation coverage, which I think on average is about $3.50 out of every $100 of payroll, and probably much higher than that for companies with employees in the field. There are the benefits that we've already discussed in terms of the wages and the overtime and the expense reimbursement, and then there's insurance under the Affordable Care Act. And there are liability considerations in terms of employment discrimination and harassment and any number of types of lawsuits to which an employer may be subject, but a hirer of independent contractors is exempt.
Tom, let me put this one to you. If a Uber driver driving his or her car gets in an accident, whose insurance is responsible, let's say, to the other driver, if the Uber driver was at fault?
I would expect that the driver's insurance.
It's the driver's insurance. So, Michael and Josh, let me come back to you for a moment. Michael, I think you're telling us that Uber and Lyft and the other businesses like this, and they consider themselves as technology companies, they are not providing any kind of liability insurance for the drivers who are driving these passengers. Is that right?
My understanding is that that was initially the case, and then there was a lot of negative press because I believe the auto insurance policies of certain Uber drivers who may have been involved in collisions had commercial use exclusions in them.
Oh, I see.
So there were accidents that weren't covered, and since that time, although this is a point where if we receive calls from actual drivers, it would be interesting to get the details. I believe that Uber and Lyft both facilitate forms of coverage that do cover the rides themselves. Now, whether those policies extend outside of the car, and if an Uber driver trips and shatters his ankle while getting in or out of his vehicle during a shift, the sort of thing that workers' comp coverage would cover for any employee, my assumption is that those automobile policies probably do not cover the driver in that.
Josh, do you have a point on this? And then I want to take a very brief break. Josh, do you have a point on this with regard to the insurance coverage?
Yeah, I think the other issue is, you know, drivers for Uber and Lyft are only technically on the clock for a very limited portion of their, you know, shift, if you want to call them that, right? So when a driver has a passenger in the car, the insurance agreement may apply when the driver is out driving around or waiting for a passenger to signal the driver, there may not be insurance coverage, is my understanding.
Let me interrupt
you. But again, as Michael said, an Uber driver would probably have a better sense of that than I would.
Yeah, and I hope an Uber driver will join us. Bear with me just for about a minute or so, everybody. This month, 75 years ago, KLW became the first FM station west of the Mississippi River. You may not have known that. If the discussions of legal issues on your legal rights have helped you, like my three friends here who are volunteer attorneys in providing this information to you, if this kind of legal information has helped you solve a legal problem or avoid a legal problem, please support KLW and what it stands for by making a contribution by calling 1-800-525-9917 or go to the website klw.org and click on the donate button. 72% of KLW's budget comes from listeners' contribution. This is a non-commercial radio serving public radio listeners. And for those of you who are tenants, NOLO publishes a legal book as well as an employment law book. And it has donated its recent editions of both the California Tenants' Rights book as well as the Your Rights in the Workplace book. If you'd like either and would like to pledge $100 to KLW, we'll send it to you. You know, NOLO, by the way, I want you to know, is neither a funder of your legal rights or of KLW, but is a great supporter of both this radio program and this station. So if you contribute $100 and would like a copy, please call 1-800-525-9917 or go to the website at www.klw.org and click on donate. And thank you very much for listening and supporting KLW. And again, for those of you listening to the live program, I want you to know we'll be taking your calls in just another few minutes. And the toll-free number, we're doing this live on September 21st, 866-798-8255, wherever you are. Wherever you are in the United States, because we are live on the internet at www.klw.org and, of course, live in the Bay Area. But, Tom, you wanted to say something.
Yes. In addition to the legal issues that have been mentioned, the misclassification issue has been a significant one under labor law, such as the National Labor Relations Act enforced by the National Labor Relations Board, to the point where the current general counsel's office recently announced a policy where they would look at the issue of misclassification itself being an unfair labor practice. In other words, if you are a truck driver, if you are an Uber driver, if you are considered an independent contractor, yet the facts in the view of the NLRB consider you to be an employee, that mere act of classifying you as an independent contractor could be an unfair labor practice under which the federal government seeks to have you reclassified as an employee and seeks to restore any losses that you have incurred as a result.
So that would be a very significant amount of money, I would think.
It could be, depending upon the person and where they work. And it's something where really the Labor Board as a federal agency is taking on the whole concept of being an independent contractor and trying to restructure the workplace.
And, of course, this NLRB, this is a national, this is relating to the United States, all over the United States.
Yes, it is federal, it is national, and this is a very recent development.
Michael, let me come back to you for a moment. You mentioned there was a recent settlement of a case, I believe you said against Uber, and correct me if I'm wrong, for $30 million. In what court was that filed?
Well, that settlement was actually against Lyft.
Oh, I'm sorry, pardon me.
There was an attempt to settle a very similar action against Uber for $100 million. And the settlement against Uber was actually denied by the court. The court found that it was not enough money relative to the value of the claims, and in particular relative to the value of certain penalty claims under the Private Attorney General Act, which the state of California has an interest in. But the Lyft settlement has received preliminary approval. The original settlement in that case was, I think, a little over $12 million, and the federal court in the Bay Area rejected that settlement, said it wasn't enough money, sent the parties back to the table, and they more than doubled the value of the settlement, which is now going forward. But the Lyft settlement does not contemplate that the drivers will be reclassified as employees.
But the money, assuming that Lyft pays the whatever it is, close to $30 million, that somehow, when that is approved by the federal court, that money will then have to be distributed on a class action basis to the drivers. Is that right?
That's correct.
And does that mean all drivers in the United States, or does that just mean California? Michael, did you hear me?
Oh, I apologize, Chuck.
Let me ask the question again. The distribution of money, once the federal court approves that close to $30 million, whatever it is, will that then have to be a distribution to Uber, to Lyft drivers throughout the United States, or just in the state of California? Do you know?
I believe that the Lyft settlement is limited to a class of California drivers.
I see. Okay.
The Uber settlement I referenced was a class of California and Massachusetts drivers. It was a two-state combined class. but unless Josh or Tom has more info than I do, I'm fairly sure that Lyft was simply a California class.
Josh, you're in Colorado. What's going on from the standpoint of Colorado? Is Colorado involved with this at all? I mean, you're visiting Colorado because your firm is going to open up an office there, as I understand it. What's going on in Colorado?
Well, actually, I practice mostly in California, but, you know, it's interesting because the definition of what it means to work is different in California than it is under federal law or under some of the other state laws. And so we typically see classes involving one state. You know, so the drivers in Uber or in Lyft will sue together in a statewide class. And sometimes you'll have, you know, two states. For example, I think the big case that Michael referenced against Uber is a Massachusetts and a California class.
Wow.
But typically we do it by state because the definition of what an employee is can vary by state. And in California, actually, you see a lot of cases in California because California has a much stricter definition of what it means to work than under federal law. And it's much more employee-friendly.
Tom Lenz.
We get a lot of cases in California.
Tom, what did you have to say?
I think that, you're going to see more cases in California. That's
we are. Well, of course.
Yeah.
We are a state of great litigation.
We,
lots and lots that,
that's,
of litigation.
That's why we are here as lawyers. That's why I moved to the Pacific Coast from the Midwest.
Did you really? Hey, there you are. He admitted it. He admitted it, everybody. Let me, by the way, speaking of everybody, I want you to know who's with me. Tom Lenz is the secretary for the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar. He will become the chair of the Labor and Employment Law section within the next year or so. He is a partner in the Cerritos, California law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo. Joshua Young is with the law firm of Gilbert and Sackman, which is in L.A. And Michael Malema is with the Los Angeles law firm of Parker, Milliken, Clark, O'Hara, and sound it for me again, would you, Michael?
Simelian.
Thank you very much. So, and we'll get to those of you who have questions in just a few minutes. But we've got on the statewide version of the program probably about 3 minutes left to go. And for those of you who are not familiar with this, the first half hour of the program is the statewide version, which is recorded. We then send it out to 15 other stations in California, which air that half hour next week. Let me come back to you, Josh. I want to give you a little bit more time. What major issue would you like to talk about before we end the first half hour?
Well, I want to pick up on something Tom said about the National Labor Relations.
Yes, please.
I'm not sure we were explicit about this, but the fact that when you misclassify an employee as an independent contractor, that person no longer has the right to join a union. That's one of the fundamental rights under the, you know, under the National Labor Relations
Act,
right, which goes back 80 years. If you're not an employee, if you're an independent contractor, it could actually be an antitrust violation for you to get together with your other independent contractors and attempt to set set rates and set your wages and bargain.
Well, that's more lawsuits, isn't it, gentlemen? That's more law.
so that's a fundamental issue, and that's why the board has stepped in here, because if these people are in fact employees and they're denied their right to join a union or participate in collective bargaining, they're being denied that right, right?
Sure,
that's what the board is set up to.
Of course.
Adjudicate. So that's really a major issue and an important issue, and the reason the board is coming in.
Tom.
And this is really presented to the National Labor Relations Board right now in an election petition that was filed with Uber in New York. There was a prior petition some months ago that went away, but the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers in the last few days has filed with the National Labor Relations Board in New York State requesting an election of 600 Uber drivers. And assuming that the Labor Board goes to a vote, that would require a determination or agreement that the drivers are employees. You can imagine that there may not be agreement on that point. If an election goes forward, those drivers would be given the choice. Do you wish to be represented by a labor union or do you not?
Michael, let me come to you for a moment. In light of your earlier comments that a lot of the Uber drivers enjoy being their own boss, what is your assessment in that you are a representative or an attorney representing employers about this whole situation that drivers may not really want to be union members? And we have about half a minute if you can complete your thought briefly, if you would.
Thanks, Chuck. Yes. You know, my conclusion on this topic is that we need serious legislative reform, that the traditional employee-independent contractor dichotomy does not fit this group of workers. There is a public policy initiative sponsored by the Brookings Institute called the Hamilton Project.
Let me interrupt.
Paper on this calling for both Congress and state legislatures to create a new classification of employees.
Michael, we must end that right now. All right. Everybody, I want to give you, that's the end of the half hour, statewide version. I want to give you our toll-free number if you'd like to call in. And I do hope to hear from Uber and Lyft drivers. I would really like your comments and your input to this for my guests here. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Let me just mention again, and please bear with us because this is the 75th anniversary of KLW, and I'm hoping that you will support the next 75 years. If your legal rights and the volunteers, on-air lawyer guests, such as my three guests here, and our monthly Call a Lawyer nights when you can talk with one of several attorneys off the air have helped you solve or avoid a legal problem, please support what KLW stands for and make a contribution. And if you're a tenant, Nolo Books, which is not a funder of either your legal rights or KLW, it's just a good friend of this program and this station. It is showing its support of what we're doing by making a couple of its books available if you'd like to make a $100 pledge for either. It's California Tenants' Rights, the most recent one, and the other one is Your Rights in the Workplace. If you'd like to contribute $100 to KLW to support the station, we'll send you one of the books, depending on which one you want. If you want both, you're going to have to pay $200. And by the way, I want to mention this to you. If you're in your car, because a lot of listeners are in their cars, when you get home, you're not excused from this, everybody. Call 1-800-525-9917 or go to the website at klw.org and click on Donate and make your contribution to support KLW's future and its ongoing mission to inform and engage the public. And that number again, 1-800-525-9917 or klw.org, click Donate. And thank you for listening and your support of KLW. Now, we have a lot of people who want to talk to you, gentlemen. And I'm very pleased to hear that. Let me do one thing before we take our next call, and bear with me if you would. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. Call 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Every county in California has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is, and what they will do is find someone who's experienced for you for half an hour consultation, and with minor exception, for a half an hour, anywhere in the state of California, you will meet with an attorney and be charged $25 to $35. It's a great way to do it. The money doesn't go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So again, for those of you who may have joined us late, my guests are very experienced employment law attorneys, Michael Malema in Los Angeles, Joshua Young, who does his law practice in Los Angeles, but he's in Colorado right now, and Tom Lenz, who is a great supporter and actually is my liaison to the Labor and Employment Law Section. Tom is the one who I work very closely with in developing topics for you and guests, and he is with me in the studio. And after the program, we'll take his handcuff off so we can go home.
it's my pleasure to be here, Chuck. I love helping the show.
Okay, we're going to start with Virian. Virian, welcome to your legal rights.
How you doing?
Hi.
You had the station going on.
Go ahead. Yeah. We're on the air, my friend.
I spent 10 years in the trucking business as an independent operator, and the reason I got into it, they wouldn't let me have a job.
Uh-huh.
They said I had to join the union.
Ah.
Well, I didn't get in, so I bought a truck. Then they wanted me to join the union. I said, I'm not going to join that union. So I operated 10 years, and all of a sudden I see the same thing going on with Uber and Lyft. Is this something that's changing or something like this?
So in other words, is it your point, Virian, that you want to remain your own boss and don't want to be a part of a union?
Correct.
Okay, let me get some comments for you. And thank you very much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, great to hear from you. Thanks so much. Okay, who would like to start on that? Tom, you start, would you,
absolutely.
In response to Virian. Go ahead.
Virian, your comments are very similar to comments I have heard in working with trucking companies and companies in other industries. Some people want the protection of being an employee, and they would like to have the right to form or join a union. Others are adamantly opposed to it. They say, I want to be independent. I want to work when and where I want. I want to use my truck and do my thing in a way that I want to, rather than, you know, having a boss. It is that idea of being your own boss and working where you are that motivates some people, regardless of the industry. And I think that your feelings are not uncommon.
Josh, do you have any comments for Virian?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a union lawyer, so
of course.
Where my perspective is, but in general, union lawyers or union employees have higher wages and have the ability to bargain for their own wages, benefits, and working conditions, and improve their livelihood. And I think most people I've talked to, if given the choice, would want to be in the union, but I respect your position. I think, I think the question is not really what, it's interesting, the question of misclassification is not really about what people want as much as it is about what the law says you are, and that's an interesting point. The California law you know, has it laid out. It's not really a matter of private agreement between the company and the driver. It's more, what does the law say you are?
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe is what Michael's point is about changing the law. But we really only have two boxes we can fit people into. This independent contractor box and this employee box.
Yeah, let's take another call. Christopher from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, how are you this evening?
Hey, we're doing well. We're doing well. We still have telephone lines, which is good. Go ahead.
It's great to hear. I'm a recently new volunteer for KALW, and I love the station, and I love your program.
Thank you.
So the first question I had, I'm not a ride-sharing driver or a user, but I am an independent contractor based here in the city, and I'm curious who's responsible currently for injuries to a passenger in a ride-sharing service vehicle that is the owner may now be considered an independent contractor. And what's the difference between that and an employee who's responsible for an injured passenger?
So Christopher, let me make sure I understand. Are you now an independent contractor driving your own vehicle with passengers?
No, I am not a ride-sharing service driver or passenger.
What?
I am an independent contractor in another industry.
Okay, all right. Well, let me get some comments. You don't want to tell us what the industry is?
Yes, and then the other comment that I have is how do the unions feel about this push by the ride-sharing services to make this autonomous driverless vehicle service happen as quickly as possible? It's now being tested on the streets of Pittsburgh. And how much are the ride-sharing services being motivated to make this autonomous vehicle thing happen to eliminate responsibility for people as employees?
Let me get some comments for you, because I think all three of my guests will probably want to respond. Turn your radio back up, Christopher. Thank you very much for your question and your comments. And frankly, when I hear about the driverless cars, I get a little shaky myself about that, but let me turn, Tom, to you first. Do you want to say something first, and then we'll go to Michael and then to Josh?
There were a few questions.
Yes, there were. We're going to have to do another program in a few months on this.
My understanding is that the unions want these individuals who are independent contractors as designated to be considered employees in order to extend protections as employees, to bargain on their behalf, to provide them wages and benefits in a manner that they don't currently have, as well as benefit coverage. And in many instances, it would be changing a business model for a particular business. And many businesses will object for a variety of reasons, including the agreements that people have signed. I think that in many ways, it's a way for unions to adapt to the current workplace. It's also a way for them to recoup at a time when they are losing membership and they need to develop more of a dues base for the future. And additionally, it's a credibility thing for unions, because as they have membership in the private sector around 7%, where decades ago it was 35%, of the private sector workforce, it's a way for them to regain their status.
This 7% you're talking about, is that California or across the country?
Nationally, private sector union membership.
Boy,
yes.
That's the first time I've heard that. Michael, let me turn to you. What comments do you have?
Let me pick up a different part of the question, and
please,
that
if
is
you
the
would.
Automation issue, because this is something that we are starting to see in Los Angeles, where we have recently had local minimum wage hikes, which are provoking a very similar reaction from all sorts of businesses.
Yeah.
I think it is a inevitable question that companies ask themselves when labor costs rise, whether that's through forced change in classification from a group of workers or to increases in wages or changes in requirements for insurance. How can I reduce my labor costs, or am I going to raise my prices? And we're starting to see McDonald's in downtown Los Angeles that have self-use terminals, sort of like what you see at the airport. We are seeing parking garages that used to have live attendants and valets that are replacing them with machines. And, you know, it has a definite social cost to see
yes.
these jobs evaporating out from under us. So, yeah, as far as the caller's question, would Uber love to replace its live drivers who are bringing hundreds of lawsuits against it with computers who don't? I'm sure it would if that technology were really available and functional. I think it's not yet, but you know, perhaps one day it will be.
Josh, what comments do you have for Christopher?
Yeah, so unions really, I mean, the interest of unions is not only in increasing the number of jobs available, but enabling people to take their life into their own hands, right, to bargain collectively to better their wages, hours, and working conditions. And that's what unions are all about. Some of the unions I work for example, the Steelworkers Union has organized taxi drivers in Vegas. And the industry has been, gutted by Uber and Lyft and ride-sharing mm-hmm. services. You just go down the street in any major city in America and you see, cars with Uber and Lyft symbols on them, and you don't see as many taxis as you used to. And the interest of the unions is, in making them employees, because if they're employees, then they can unionize and bargain. If they're independent contractors, that is illegal.
But Josh, if, however, Uber is able, and Lyft and whomever ever it may be, to develop this driverless car, then the unions are, you don't need a union for that. What comments do you as a union lawyer have to say about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing. I've never seen a company openly say, we have this workforce and we wish we didn't have it, right? I mean, most automation happens, for example, in a grocery store. When you go into a grocery store now and see automated terminals, the grocery stores don't say, we really want to lay off all of our employees and replace them with automated terminals, right? They just don't have the guts, I guess, to do that. But Uber and Lyft openly says, we welcome the day when we will have no drivers working for us. And it's kind of flabbergasting. I don't know how we operate as a society where there's, without jobs.
Wow.
So
in other words, if we go so far with this, maybe extending this out, instead of having a traffic cop at an intersection, we'll now have a robot at some point in the future. I can see this is being the next big deal.
Yeah, it's.
It seems like the autonomous car thing is going to happen.
Yeah,
it's not just going to happen with Uber and Lyft. It's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you, it scares me.
In terms of workplace law issues, automation has always been a hot button.
Oh,
and anytime you take away jobs from human beings and replace them with machines, there will be tension between the workers, be it union represented or not, and the employer. And I expect that this could be a race between automation and rulings on legal issues as to whether these workers are employees or contractors.
Well, I hope if we go to the robot-driven cars, I hope they behave themselves. If you would all just kind of give me a moment here. If you value what we're doing at KLW and your legal rights, public radio, your membership and support of KLW will assure KLW's future. It's been on the air for 75 years. We would like to see it going on as a public radio station, non-commercial, with its ongoing mission to inform and engage the public, which I think is very important to you. I hope you feel it's important to you. There is no corporate funding of KLW. Every contribution makes a difference. The basic membership is $50. In this drive, we've had listeners give $100, $365, that's a dollar a day, even $1,000. At any level, we value your participation. Every person who gets involved makes a difference. And as a thank you gift, for those of you who may be tenants, NOLA Press, which does not fund your legal rights or this station, but is a great believer in what we are doing, has volunteered by sending to the station a number of its California Tenants' Rights books, the current issue. And it has also sent a number of its books, Your Rights in the Workplace, if you would like either. You can pledge $100, and if you want to pledge $200, you get both. But please call 1-800-525-9917 or go to klw.org and click on the donate button. And both of these gifts that NOLO is making available, and they are great books, believe it. They are great. They're very large, big paperback books, not legalese type. They're really very helpful with a lot of forms. They're very well written, and actually they're very valuable. So if you pledge $100 for either or both, you will get both of the books or one or the other. And I thank you for listening and supporting KALW. And we're going to take another call, George from Tiburon. Hi, George.
Oh, hi. I have a question for... A comment was made earlier about insurance.
Yes.
And... Could that attorney please clarify? It's my understanding that if an Uber driver drives his own car, his own insurance is covering him or her, and even to go to pick up a ride, that is the case. But the moment that a ride is picked up, then at that, if there's an accident, that at that point, it's my understanding that the Uber driver needs to have a commercial driver's insurance.
Ah.
Policy. Now, could someone please clarify?
Yeah, that? turn your radio back up, George.
I'm not on the radio. I'm listening through the phone.
Oh, you're not on the radio. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Who wants to start on this one? Because I think we already had the answer on that. Why don't you, if you would, Josh, what comments do you have for George on his question?
Well, I wish I'd boned up on the insurance requirements. My understanding was that you're right, George, that the insurance began once the driver was actively engaged in service. But I must say, I may be incorrect about that. I haven't looked that up. If there's an Uber driver out there who would like to call in and clarify, that would be great. But
Michael,
that was my understanding, at least as of a couple of years ago.
Michael, do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, I think that is correct as well. The caveat to that is that, you know, if there is ambiguous language in the policy of the Uber driver that is, you know, that we are relying on to cover the period of time where, for example, the Uber driver has received a ride request, the driver has hit, yes, I want to accept this request, and is driving from wherever he was parked to pick up the passenger, you could conceive of a scenario where a terrible car accident occurs with a massive liability attached to it. And that in that sort of scenario, an insurance company might decide to test the policy by turning around and suing its insured and saying, we don't think this is our liability after all, because we think you were engaged in commercial business from the point that you accepted that ride to where you went and picked up the passenger, and your commercial policy.
And certainly once you have the passenger in the vehicle, that's the same scenario, is it not?
It is, but that's where, you know, our understanding is that there is this separate policy that has been facilitated by the ride-sharing companies at this point.
I see. Okay.
That covers the passenger drive time. What I'm not sure about is the coverage for that period of time where you're driving to pick up your ride.
Who should George go to at this point, assuming that let's say he is an Uber or Lyft driver, or maybe one of the other businesses, who should he go to determine what's going on? To me, if it were me, and I don't know anything about this, I would, if I am a driver working as a driver for Uber or Lyft or one of the others, I would call my own insurance agent who has the liability coverage on my vehicle to find out what's going on. Would you agree with that, Tom?
I would. It's going to be a matter of how that specific policy has been drafted.
Yeah. So, George, I think your best bet here, assuming that you are a driver and you are picking up passengers, I think you should call your own insurance agent Make sure that this is someone who is familiar with you and you feel confident about what information you're going to get. Have your policy in front of you when you're talking with your insurance agent, or perhaps even go into the insurance agent's office so that you make sure that you are properly covered as you continue to do this. And I appreciate your calling. Does that answer your question, George? I guess we lost George. All right.
You know, this is Josh. If I could just jump in.
Josh, go ahead, please.
I've consulted the internet in the time we have been talking, and it appears we are correct. I think the Uber insurance policy covers the period between the time that a driver accepts a trip, so the time that they engage with a passenger on the smartphone, and to drive to pick up that passenger, and then once they pick up that passenger and transport the passenger to the destination.
So that
what
means...
What it does not cover is the time that the driver would be waiting for a
call.
Engagement, right?
Yeah. Let me make sure that I understand. So in other words, once the passenger's in the vehicle, let's say the Uber or Lyft or whatever vehicle, and let's say there is a terrible accident where the passenger is very badly injured. Are you saying, Josh, as you understand actually accessing the Uber website, are you saying that that passenger, if badly injured, would be covered by this commercial insurance provisions that Uber has covering the driver?
So it appears.
Okay.
But I'm just reading here off the internet. I have not...
Yeah. Right. You know, this is so complicated. Again, George, if you're listening, and I thought you were still on the phone, but apparently not. If you are listening, I highly recommend to you to talk with and probably go into your insurance agent's office and sit down and talk with him or her and make sure you understand what's going on and they understand what's going on. All right, let's take another call. We have Andy. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
I drive for Lyft, or with Lyft as the app that I use most of the time. And in that question about insurance, I've found out from two different insurance companies that, sorry about that, I don't know if I should mention the two insurance agencies or not, but the companies that insure people are, one is called a ride sharing, about Rider. The other one they're both called ride sharing riders, and it just costs another $25 a month.
Really? And how did you find them, Andy?
Well, through my insurance agent, like you suggested.
Ah, okay.
I immediately asked them after I started, you know, how do I get insured through your company? Because they're still not sure how to insure us through Lyft or Uber in a very clear way.
Now, I understand it, a rider is something that you can pay extra to your own insurance company.
Exactly.
And they will add, at that extra cost, which you said is $25 a month or whatever it is, they will add that additional protection to your regular automobile insurance policy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then George, who asked the question, George, you just heard what Andy said. That's something you want to discuss with your own insurance agent. Anything else, Andy?
Yeah, what Lyft told me once is that there's three different periods in the insurance in what they offer. And there's the period that you're on the app and you're waiting for a ride. So, and then there's a period where you're on the app and you're on your way to the ride, and the period of when you have the customer in your car.
Wow. There's nothing like a little confusion, Tom.
Oh, it's just absolute hair splitting.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, everybody, if you're going to get involved with this, you better be sure that you have taken the time to sit down with your insurance agent. Don't just do it over the phone. Go in and talk with your insurance agent nose to nose, in my opinion. This is real serious stuff. So thank you, Andy, for your thoughts on this. And thank you, George, for bringing up the question. I think we have time for maybe one more call or so. And I think we've got Ben. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Hi.
Let's see. So I'm an independent contractor for a number of small businesses right now, as doing a number of different things. I've been selling wine. I've been building cabinets. I've been doing all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But generally, these people are small business owners that I've been working for. And I've been lucky enough to be employed by folks who actually care about me. And they turn into friends, and we've got good relationships, I think. But it's really difficult for me to continue navigating this space where I'm an independent contractor, so I'm unprotected, uninsured, at will employee, right? And
do you have a question, though, Ben? Because we're getting close to the end of the program.
Sorry. So, let's see. What does it mean for an employer to get, like a small business owner, to then, if they have to classify me as a full employee, what are the steps that they have to take to do that, and what does it mean for them to keep afloat?
Very good. Very good question. Turn your radio back up, if you would, and let me get some comments. Tom, what comments do you have?
Well, you would want to reflect in your file for this individual that they are an employee. You'd want to have all the requisite paperwork to show that you've done your due diligence. You'd probably want to have an application and so forth, but you'd want to also have your I-9 to prove eligibility to work in the United States.
That's an IRS form, I-9?
It's a federal form, but it's the Department of Homeland Security.
Ah, yes.
And it's employment eligibility. You would want to make sure that you are paying workers' compensation insurance on this individual. You would want to pay them and have payroll records that would reflect the manner in which someone is paid by the hour and their rate and so forth. You would want to issue a pay stub with the regular paychecks.
With withholding for taxes.
Exactly. There are tax consequences. There are a number of things, and this is really just in limited time sort of glossing over the many requirements that there are.
Wow. Incredible. Michael, very briefly, we're nearly at the end of the program. What comments do you have?
I think Tom has done a nice job of laying out the sort of steps that an employer has to take, and the basic paperwork requirements, and then it's an issue of whether the caller, whether his duties and the sort of means and manner of control exercised by his various hirers puts him in this box of being an employee, or whether he is essentially controlling the type of work that he does, and really what's being looked at is, does he get to a particular result, which is more what we expect from an independent contractor.
We have now come
in his location and how he does the work managed.
Gentlemen, we have come to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us. Michael Malema in Los Angeles, Joshua Young, usually in Los Angeles, but in Colorado right now, and Tom Lenz, who's right here with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck,
for joining us on the program. Next time, everybody, on Your Legal Rights, the topic will be debtors dealing with debt collectors. We'll talk about the legal rights of debtors and protections provided by the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. My guest will be Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law. Your Legal Rights production staff members are, and it's very nice to have her here. Debbie Kennedy is the announcer operator. Debbie, lovely to have you here. Production assistant Martin McLean, always nice to have Martin here. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding of the program has been made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. And what I want to do is make sure that you are enjoying this program, and I hope you will join us again when we get back on the air, and I hope you'll join us on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.